May the divine assistance remain always with us.
Amen.
So good evening.
Good evening.
So let us reflect tonight on tool number 31 from chapter 4 of the rule. In English, in the RB 80, it reads, love your enemies. In Latin, inimicos diligere. Now, inimicus is the nominative, the noun for enemy, but it's also an adjective. And this is where we get some interesting nuances. As an adjective, inimicus means injurious, hostile, unfriendly. Diligere, often translated love, can also have the nuanced suggestions of something that is esteemed or prized especially, with special esteem. So I would translate this, love your enemies, that's a good translation, but my translation with these nuances, hold in special esteem one who intentionally injures you. Well, I think you can see this is quite shocking in a worldly way of thinking, to hold in special esteem one who intentionally injures me, harms me, hurts me, is hostile to me, and I'm to hold this person in special esteem. Well, this is the gospel, after all. So let's again go back to the Sermon on the Mount, or also the Sermon on the Plain, using St. Luke's account. We know already, all of you know, Jesus says, love your enemies. He introduces this verse. This is, of course, in the Sermon on the Mount. He introduces this verse with, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. So you said, yeah, I've heard that someplace. Actual fact, even Jesus is misquoting. This comes from Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. It has two parts. And it really never says, hate your enemy. No, we're not saying Jesus was trying to mislead us. I'm not saying that. But actually, Leviticus says, take no revenge and cherish no grudge against your fellow countrymen. And then he goes on to, or Leviticus goes on to say, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, according to the biblical commentaries I consulted, when they say you shall love your neighbor, neighbor means here your fellow countrymen, your fellow citizen, your fellow Hebrew, not anyone outside the Hebrew or Jewish family. So, what? In other words, again, whether you agree with it or not, but it's clearly there. There was a commonly held view in the Old Testament that the hatred of an evil person is assumed to be right, totally correct. It's okay to hate an evil person. I guess the problem is, how do we define evil? Well, we sing Psalm 139. It's a strong psalm. At least it should kind of wake us up out of our stupor sometimes. Oh God, that you would slay the wicked Do I not hate those who hate you, abhor those who rise against you? I hate them with a perfect hate, and they are foes to me. Okay, so you can start seeing where Jesus says you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, as it's been said, as he says. Even though Leviticus, strictly speaking, doesn't say that. But here we have a development of this in these later Psalms, which come after Leviticus, historically. Well, we know, again, just from the Sermon on the Mount here, Sermon on the Plain, that the New Testament does make this shift, thanks to Jesus, because we have the parable of the Good Samaritan, which comes from Luke. So suddenly the neighbor is no longer just one of my own kind, ethnically, in the same blood, etc. Suddenly it's everyone else too, including this guy who's outside our circle of faith and in culture, in this case the Samaritan and the Jew. And it's clear that when Jesus shares this parable of the Good Samaritan, he has extended this meaning to embrace everyone, all people, including enemies. Meanwhile, Luke, in his Sermon on the Plain, makes clear this thing about loving enemies. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Of course, the context is the rain falls on the good and the bad, and etc. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Of course, we're familiar with that, just having come a few years ago from that special year that Pope Francis called for, and where we wear, every time I think of our sisters there, a rosary, the lovely chasuble they embroidered and sent to us a few years ago, and the white chasuble. And then likewise, again, Luke has the image of the shepherd searching for the lost sheep, making every effort, and no sacrifice is too great for the lost sheep. And the idea is the lost sheep has caused his or her own problems, and that's why he or she is lost. And yet the good shepherd is out there putting all the other 99 in jeopardy for the sake of finding this one, in one sense, stupid sheep. And then further on in Matthew chapter 18, so now we leave the Sermon of the Mount behind, when Peter, puzzling over Jesus' strong stance on mercy, etc., says, well, how many times do I have to really forgive? Seven times. Isn't that sufficient? Of course, we know Jesus' answer. He says, no, 77 times, meaning eternally, endlessly, infinitely, to forgive, and to forgive again. I remember years ago as we sat in this chapter room and we were concluding a visitation, probably around close to 30 years ago, one brother who always sat, this is a little different arrangement, but there was a little step up here, and anyway, he always sat way back up in the back. He never sat with the community. And I guess, ready to run out at the first opportunity. I don't know what the thing was. But he says, well, Dom Timothy, he was the father immediate of Gethsemane at the time, Dom Timothy, and he says, Dom Timothy, can't imitate his voice, but I just can't forgive. And Dom Timothy said to him, he says, that's why we go to, that's why we need the sacrament of reconciliation, why we need the sacrament of forgiveness, to go again and again and again, simply because we cannot forgive on our own. But at any rate, we have this example of Jesus himself. You know, here we have Jesus, and maybe you never thought of it, but Jesus loved Judas. I mean, nowhere in the gospel does it actually say that. But for whatever, however Jesus lived and taught, we know Jesus loved Judas. Hold in special esteem one who intentionally injures you. You know, we know Jesus prayed for those who crucified him, and it resulted in the conversion of one of those. The good thief didn't crucify him, but it resulted in the conversion of that, the repentant thief. But prayed for those. Of course, the way, you know, as we're going to hear in a few weeks, you know, the one centurion was also deeply moved and converted on the site, on the spot. Likewise, we know from the Gospel of Luke again, James and John, very angry and insulted by the inhospitality of the Samaritans, who would not allow Jesus and his followers to cross over and make a shortcut to Galilee through Samaria. And James and John just say, let's call fire on them, these stupid Samaritans. Of course, Jesus rebukes them, as we know. So who are our enemies? Well, we know it's easy enough to look at, you know, the external enemies, isn't it? You know, those who are going to be outright opposing and hating us. You know, and there's a politically, culturally, social, racial, and religious hate. You know, I oppose immigrants. I oppose Catholics. I oppose the LGBTQT community. I oppose communists. I oppose capitalists. I oppose Republicans. I oppose Democrats. We hear that all the time, don't we, in the news, and you can add a whole litany right there. Well, okay, you know, I mean, those are external to us. All you have to question if they're really our enemies is just me projecting my, in many cases, it's projecting my own insecurities on these, either a group or whatever, social unit. But then there are the brothers or the enemies internal to us. You know, and internal in the sense of, you know, here we are all together in a community. And there will be eventually, if you haven't experienced it yet, and sometimes more intensely than other times, you're going to find it difficult to live with someone in this community. And maybe impossible to live with that person or those persons, or whatever it is, a real struggle to express and operate out of a genuine charity. You know, but then there are the ultimate inner enemies. We call them in Greek the logismoi. All those thoughts that attempt to disrupt, divide my heart. And we spend so much of our life battling, we'll spend our whole life battling the logismoi. Well, our enemy, whether it's a true enemy or simply how I have labeled the person, our neighbor, perhaps it's better to say, teaches us about ourselves. That's what makes the common life at moments very, very intense, because each of you teach me something about myself and vice versa. As we know, the neighbor or life in common can evoke the things hidden within us that we don't allow to surface or try to block or somehow actually repress. But this way of life is designed, and gradually that rises to the surface and our life can become very uncomfortable. And we can do so many things to attempt to block that by blaming everyone else on this or that situation. Well, it's these things that are evoked by life in common that provide the opportunity to forgive and experience God's mercy. And we know again from Matthew 6, chapter 14, or verse 14, chapter 6, verse 14, to forgive is to be like God. If you forgive others their transgressions, your heavenly Father will forgive you. Well, suddenly Jesus is saying, if you forgive, then your Father forgives you. And so the ability to forgive your neighbor is an act, a divine act. And likewise, if you do not forgive others, neither will your Father forgive your transgressions. You know, it's very powerful. You know, we hear it so often, and yet can so often miss the point. You know, since we either open up heaven to the neighbor or we block heaven to the neighbor, and vice versa. I block heaven myself by my decisions. So in a sense, I have a certain authority or power to open up heaven by my ability to forgive or not to forgive. And that is power. Well, it is a grace, I think you will agree, not to turn away from loving. And when we can pray for our enemies, you know, it's a very powerful grace. The need to strengthen our faith before and after our enemies attack us, as it were. So that's why I need to pray for my brothers in community. I need to pray for the world. I need to pray for our world leaders, whether I like them or not. That's not the question. I've got to love them and pray for them. And so I need to have my faith strengthened. It's just like as much as I can understand this video or audio book. A lot of times I can't understand it, but this Father Stanley, he really had to pray for what was going on in Guatemala. I can identify with it because that's where, in the same area, I studied Spanish back in 1995 when this this thing was still going on, which I didn't know, because I probably would never have gone to Guatemala. I thought it was over. Anyway, when I saw a few things that registered after the fact. But, and this grace to pray, to love, whoever this enemy, it's a true ascetical exercise that pushes me to my limits, and that's the point of asceticism. It pushes me to my limits, where I simply either cannot do it and cannot continue, which is part of the point of our ascetical practice, because it shows us that we need God. We heard that a little in this book, whether it was last night or one night. Help! Oh God, come to my assistance. Lord, make haste to help me. Don't be delaying there. I need your help now. And so this not to turn away from loving the enemy causes me to be honest with my own self and to beg honestly for God's grace, his strength, his help, his love, because I know I cannot do it alone. I cannot do it on my mere human ability and will, as much as that is a part of it. In other words, we cannot do this on our own initiative. We need God's help. So therefore, it is a divine act. And as I said earlier, to forgive is to be divine, because only God can forgive. And yet I am invited to participate in God's divine forgiveness. So love your enemies. Hold in special esteem one who intentionally injures you.